RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. This week, we've got an interesting episode of Arrow, a departure, I guess you could call it, from their standard format. Mark Guggenheim described it, kind of like a throwback episode to, the 80s and 90s, when they had TV episodes about the, issues of the day or something like that.
Oh, yes. When they had. Now, have you ever heard of the word, moral? You know what a moral is? Like, a story can have a moral.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard that before?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that stories have morals? I kind of almost felt like this might have had a moral. Did it have a moral? I don't know. I'm stretching. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Possibly. Hey, Felicity, what did we learn today?
Well, gee, Oliver.
We have a G.I. Joe character coming on at the end and telling us the lesson of the show on
mm-hmm.
this.
Yeah, it was not as awkward as that. Where they would
do the little
2 minute bit at the end where it's like, don't get in the van with Cobra Commander or whatever it is,
Oh, jeez.
I just want to give him some ice cream.
Wasn't quite like that. No.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. So
actually,
it was thought provoking, I would say.
It was thought provoking, and as heavy handed as it could have been, or as awkward as it could have been, I hesitate to use the phrase fair and balanced, but it was not as cringeworthy as I thought it could be. When I heard that they were doing an episode here about gun violence, Mark Guggenheim was writing it, I kind of knew what to expect, and I thought it was well done. I thought it addressed multiple viewpoints and did it in a pretty good job. And we're going to try to talk about that a little bit this week. So if you would, why don't you give us the preamble here, and then we can move into it.
All right. Well, let me talk a little bit about what it was, as much of a story as there was one, but I'll kind of run down the timeline of what was happening, and then we can get into the topics. But this was episode 13 from season 5. Spectre of the Gun was the title of this, and it was all about Spectre. Comic book character from we went James Bond. I thought maybe we were talking about the comic book character.
Spectre. Oh, that would be awesome if they ever got around to doing him. He was supposed to be on on Constantine before they canceled it. So.
Oh, geez, he just didn't get there in time. They ran out of time. They went over.
Yes.
Anyway, Spectre of the Gun on Arrow aired February 15th, 2017. This episode was written by Mark Guggenheim and directed by Kristen Wendelly. Oh, no, Wendell. Sorry.
Wendell. Mm-hmm.
I zoomed into my screen a little bit there. Well, this week on a very special episode of Arrow. No. Not going to start it off like that. Nope. But it does set up this topical episode. That is really kind of what it was about, in which the team, the city, and the audience all ponder the consequences of gun violence. So as Mayor Queen diligently performs his mayoral duties at his office, a masked gunman enters and begins to viciously murder just about anyone in his path. Many innocent workers are dead. Adrian is shot, and Oliver isn't able to stop the homicidal man before he escapes. Well, the police and the mayor's office work diligently to track him down, but it's Team Arrow that succeeds, of course. all the while having heated discussions about guns. Well, it turns out that the gunman is a man named James Edlund, whose family was gunned down in a mall a few years ago. And now he wants to send a message to the government to do something to curb the rampant gun violence in Star City. Well, everyone wants to express their opinion, and the emotions are running high. A member of the team who has very strong feelings when it comes to the right to bear arms is Renee. And we see a little bit of his backstory, which includes a druggy wife and a daughter that he loves a lot. Unfortunately, he's not able to save his wife, and this sets his life on a downward spiral until he's finally inspired to become Wild Dog and save the city. But this crisis is really only going to be solved by Mayor Queen and not Green Arrow. Before Edlund has a chance to shoot up a hospital, Oliver arrives and he talks him down. So more killings were avoided, but now he has to figure out a way to please all sides of the gun debate and save his city.
You know how I knew this episode didn't take place in America?
How do you know?
Because when the gunman finally put his gun down and the police, arrested him, they didn't just beat the shit out of him. So.
Oh. That's pretty good evidence to support your claim there.
It was a pretty good episode. It wrapped up a little pat, with James. Like I knew that James was probably going to turn the gun on himself, but I felt like he, put the gun down a little too easily, but they did need to wrap up and everything like that. So,
was there a guy just off camera pointing to his wrist? It's time. You need to be done. Yeah.
The red lights flashing and everything. So, okay. Well, before we get into some of the topics here, there were actually several articles that I had seen across the web this week about how the producers, the executive producers, are going to move forward. Mark Guggenheim, Wendy Miracle, were talking to a number of outlets about what they've got planned, what's coming up, and you found a particular one here about. Just talking a little bit about Oliver moving forward after this episode.
Yeah, the reason I wanted to bring this up was because as Mark Guggenheim was talking about, obviously, this episode was probably something that stood out to a lot of people that discuss these types of shows and Arrow specifically, because it was very different. It was a very topical show about controversial topic.
Hot button topic, yeah.
A very hot button topic, that divides a lot of people in our country. And so, of course, they're going to be asking him about this specific episode. But what I thought was interesting was how he made a point of saying that this is going to change Oliver. This is really going to affect how he moves forward, which thank goodness. Otherwise, it would really just be
awkward.
Well, a preachy show-off episode of spouting your personal beliefs or your political beliefs, whatever. I'm not saying that I agree or disagree necessarily, but I'm just saying that, if they didn't use this as part of the overall storyline, it could come across a bit preachy.
Understood.
While I think there's a place for that, I'm glad that, it is part of the overall storyline. So, Guggenheim said that it's really going to be it puts Oliver in a little bit more of a gray area, is what he says, of the complexities of him being a killer, because Oliver has killed people, in the guise of Green Arrow. And
right. And they talk about the violence that the team undertakes each week in this episode as well.
Right.
So how do they balance all that? Well, that's right. Good to know that they are, like you said, that they're using this as a moment for the characters and not just as this one-off thing to kind of make the producers feel better about, putting an episode out there that, says something, right?
And one thing that I have always outspoken maybe, about this series was good or bad. Oliver is constantly changing as a hero. He's constantly developing himself. And he's not just that same one-sided character. And you know, and I'm going to make this claim not thinking too much about it, but like a Batman. To me, in the last, I'll go ahead and say 20 years, Batman has been a very black and white character to me. He's always the same. He's always dark and brooding and violent. And, you know, there's varying degrees of him from ultra violent to moderately violent to, well, Lego Batman. But to me, that's one of the more interesting versions of Batman I've seen since Michael Keaton was Batman. So, but that's, like I said, good or bad, whether you like the direction they're taking the character or not, I think Arrow has successfully progressed this character in a realistic way for me, because he does experience really traumatic things in his life that would make a difference in your decisions moving forward. So,
yeah, a lot of growth in the character, and it's different than we've seen portrayed in the comics and everything like that. But they're they are sprinkling bits of that comic book storyline in there, and so yeah, it's I would agree with that. So, well, cool. There's a lot of other information in the articles that I've seen online about Prometheus and what they're going to do with Dinah, and you know, just some other things that I feel like they kind of give too much away when they do these interviews. I wish they'd be just a little more tight-lipped, not even teasy, because they say, "Well, how about blah blah blah," and you're like, "Man, I didn't necessarily need to know that, but
knew a little bit too much." Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't help inform me to be prepared, but I see where you're coming from.
Well, if you want to read this particular article, you can go to IGN.com. It's the February 16th, 2017 article on how Arrow's gun control debate impacts Oliver Queen's vigilante outlook. All right. So, you and I had some discussions before we sat down to record this episode just about how are we going to discuss this episode and not just get into some kind of rehashing of the debate that was kind of on the show. So hopefully, the way I've kind of organized our show notes will help. We're obviously going to talk about the episode. I came up with a little fact check sheet because there were parts where characters spouted out statistics. Yeah, made claims.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wanted to look up some information. This is not the sort of stuff that I really enjoy doing. I do not like having to fact check. I do not like having to fact check my real life stuff. I even less like having to fact check my my entertainment. So,
well, and you did it to be, you know, for our show. You did it to be straightforward. Yes. and honest. You know, when in our discussion, so it was more factual and less opinion. You know, you wouldn't have to do that. You could just take it on face value if you're watching the show. But
I could, and there was stuff that I felt was opinion on the show. And of course, they talked about some tragedies that had befallen Starling City. And characters that obviously were not real life situations. But I believe everything on there was inspired by real life stuff. Before we even get into the discussions, I just wanted to ask you, Josh, because they're talking about gun violence, and pretty much every character on this episode, I think every character on this episode has had gun violence affect them in some way. Obviously, you know, some, you know, like Oliver and Thea and Adrian and Quentin were there for the shooting. Renee obviously has had some issues. Dinah, ex-cop, obviously had a lot of problems.
Sure.
You know, Curtis and Felicity have had their issues in the past. Has there been something that has affected you? Has gun violence come into your household or into your neighborhood or into your community in some way?
I would say, you know, fortunately for me, you know, I, not not a a personal, you know, family kind of issue. I would say that the closest thing that I have had is, as a teacher, I was teaching a group of, you know, 10-year-olds, 5th graders, the year that the Columbine tragedy happened. And Columbine is a high school which is just a few short miles away from where I teach and where I live. And also, you know, the people that I work with and know new people that worked at Columbine. And we somebody that I am a close friends with that I also worked with at the time, her brother was the principal at Columbine. And we even have at our school this year a child of a student that was injured in that tragedy. Wow. So, you know, that's the closest thing I can get. But it was a really scary day, you know, for us.
Sure.
And as teachers protecting kids, you know, we weren't sure exactly what was happening. So that's the closest thing I think I've gotten personally. But then from there, a lot of the things that have happened in the world, you know, affect me emotionally. Sure. As it does many people. So
sure.
But it gets scary, you know.
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely. I completely understand that. I grew up in Southern California, and I went to the University of Southern California, USC, to college. I was out there during the O.J. Simpson trial. I was out there during the Rodney King beating, the Reginald Denny beating, and the L.A. riots. And even when those kind of things aren't going on, there was still a lot of gang activity. While I was at college, I knew of at least 2 students that were shot during the time. One was a football player on campus. There was a gun fired off campus, and the bullet struck him, I don't know, like a block into campus. It, you know, went up in the air, came down, and hit him while he was practicing. Another student was walking past the apartment complex, which was off campus, that I lived at, which is just right across the street from campus, and they were shot in the back. Now, luckily, they were wearing their backpack, which was full of their books, and that actually acted as a as kind of like a bulletproof vest for them.
Kevlar.
Yeah, so, you know, you had things like that that were going on in college. And then, I don't know, about 3 or 4 years ago, there was a mall out here in near Baltimore that somebody walked in with a gun and walked into the skate shop just inside on a Saturday afternoon and started shooting up at the employees inside the skateboard shop. I think I don't believe anyone was killed, but there were a number of people that were injured. This person obviously had a grievance with the store or somebody in that store. So, you know, it was random, but it wasn't anything. But, you know, it was like lockdown. My kids luckily were not at the mall at that time, but they do frequent that establishment. So, you know, that kind of stuff. Again, nothing in my direct community that I'm aware of, but here in, you know, in the areas that I live, obviously there's been
sure.
been stuff like that. And I actually was driving up to my sister-in-law's after Sandy Hook, and we ended up driving through Connecticut. I wasn't even thinking about it, and we passed they had part of the freeway closed down for the funeral on the day that I was driving up, and I had to pull over. That was a horrible sort of thing. You know, it's like, oh, what's going on up here? Why is all this traffic? I'm just trying to get through. And then you realize what's going on. So, yeah, you're right. You know, there's emotionally, it takes its toll on a lot of people. Physically, it takes its toll on people as well. There was a lot of discussion in the episode, especially by Councilwoman Pollard, whatever it was, about Second Amendment rights. And that's something that comes up a lot during the gun debate. So I figured that we would introduce the topics here by just reading what the Second Amendment is. This is the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. And that amendment says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So when people talk about the fact that the Constitution gives them the right, you know, to own weapons, this is what they're referring to. So just keep that in mind. I thought it was interesting the way that they set up the debate. They set it up as a debate on the show. It wasn't just the fact that there was this shooting at the at City Hall. You know, I would like to think that we can all agree that gun violence is bad. You know, that in my mind, I guess there's a time and a place for guns, and that usually is war. I guess hunting comes after that into some, you know, sense, but they are not, you know, for me, they're not a source of recreational amusement or anything like that. They are, you know, something to be respected. And they broke down the cast into kind of three areas here. You had your, what I'm calling your anti-gun people.
Right.
That's mostly Curtis and Quentin to a degree. We really didn't get into it too much with him, but it sounded like he was really, as a former cop, he was basically against. He was the argument for guns to stay out of the hands of people that don't need them on the street, right? That was kind of his take on it. Curtis was a little more, I guess, liberal in his views, I would say. And then you had the opposite side, the pro-gun side, where, again, Renee acted as the kind of the firebrand for that discussion, and Dinah, to a closer degree, mirrored Quentin as a law enforcement person that felt that it was necessary for gun ownership. But they didn't seem to delve into that secondary level too much, right? There was just the one line from Quentin, and I think the one line from Dinah, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, with the limited amount of time, I thought they covered a spectrum of opinions on this, from
and viewpoints. Yeah.
Yeah. From two extremes, and then kind of working your way toward the middle.
Right. And then they actually had the middle, which, let's see, we didn't really hear from Diggle at all on this, I don't believe, other than the fact that he just wanted to find the people that did it by beating them to a crap, beating them to a pulp, beating the crap out of them.
Yes.
But Felicity was very decidedly neutral, to the point where she really, this is a way I see a lot of people when there are these kind of debates, you know. I don't know where you hang out with adults the most. For me, it's at work. And of course,
sorry, I hang out with adults. I'm confused now. I don't ever get to hang out with adults. So
it never happens, huh?
Very rarely. Yes.
So, you know, there are the people that want to discuss one side of an issue or another side. And then there are the people that really are like, can we just stop talking about this? Like, stop arguing. And it's like, you know, we're not arguing. We're having a discussion, and they just really, just even the thought of discussing tough subjects makes them squeamish, I guess. And I get like this in some instances. I'm very uncomfortable, especially, this is more like, when there's, discussions in the family, like political discussions in the family and stuff like this. It's like,
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing good's going to come of this, kind of like
right.
Felicity says. So, you know, within the family structure, like, so why should we even, why are we debating?
Yeah, because
it?
when you're arguing with say your family, you have a general idea of what their opinions are, and you know that nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
The debate is really more of just presenting my extreme viewpoint, I guess. I'll go ahead and say that.
Shut up and listen to me.
Yeah. So that's I think generally I'm with you. That's why I'm like, oh geez, let's not even get into this because it's not going to do any good.
Yeah.
You're not going to change anybody's mind.
But what I thought was weird about the fact that they made Felicity this neutral party and they didn't really get into why she didn't want to talk about it. Basically, I would thought she would have wanted to talk about it to help distract from the fact she was using the Pandora thing in the background. But she was shot and paralyzed last season. Hat tip to Greg M. for noting this and tweeting to us as well about this. But that was kind of a big deal, right? They made a big deal about her getting shot. And for her to not come down on one side or the other when she was directly affected. Renee was affected, but via his wife. I mean, I'm sure he's been shot, and I'm sure Quentin's been shot, and I'm sure Dinah's been shot.
Well, so I have a few thoughts on this.
Yeah, I
want to hear about this. This is what I thought when I watched it the very first time. Part of what I think Felicity's feelings about discussing it didn't come so much from any personal time when she's been shot. It was more of her losing her boyfriend earlier in the thing. And I know he was not shot with guns. You know, it wasn't the same situation. It was more of like the violence of it and coming from the violence of Prometheus. And so that's kind of where I was getting it when I first saw it. Mm-hmm. And then I thought about some of these things and what Greg said, you know, about why she was shot and paralyzed last season. But I still think it was just like, you know, she didn't really want to get in it. She doesn't like people arguing. She likes everything to be, to work, to be structured and everybody be on the same side. You know, that's why she's always kind of telling Oliver off when he's being a loner.
Right. She's very much like a negotiator between everybody on the team, it seems like.
Yeah. That is kind of her. So I that's kind of where I thought the first time that I watched it, that it might have something to do with her boyfriend's death.
Okay. I could definitely see that this particular episode bringing up bad memories from the death of John Ritter's son. Detective Malone. That's who it was.
Yeah.
That's an interesting take on it. And like you said earlier in the from the article that Guggenheim and Miracle were talking about, if this is going to continue to affect Oliver and he's going to, you know, this is going to be a turning point for him, maybe that we're going to continue discussing stuff with Felicity as well. Maybe they'll revisit this. We'll find out a little bit more about that. So Oliver, he's not necessarily neutral. He kind of starts, it seems like he starts neutral. I think the key moment for him when he realizes he does kind of have to make a choice about this in some fashion. And again, for a guy who keeps saying how non-political he really is, he's extremely political. He's also very smart. He makes the, during the press conference, you know, they're like, well, what's the, you know, what's the mayor's office, you know, what's their, how do they come out on this? And he's like, well, you know, we're going to look at both sides of it. And they're like, you know, how do you view this? And it's like, you know, he's kind of just tiptoeing around saying one way or the other how he feels. And we actually, I don't believe we ever really find out how he personally feels about this.
I personally think he doesn't know how he feels about this. I think he's very torn, you know, especially a guy like who he is. He's a vigilante who is trying to save the city. He's trying to be a hero, and he's doing it in the only way he knows, which is a lot of violence. He's learning how, you know, that violence can be used in a more positive way without killing. He's you know, experimented with that. That's a good way of putting it. He's experimented with. I've been experimenting with not killing people, you know. And so I think he's kind of torn. Like, what is his thought? What is the best way? What he wants is for innocent people to not die. That's what he wants. But I don't know that he's entirely sure how to do that. And I don't know he's entirely sure that it can be done, that he can stop things like this from happening. And I think a lot of people are feeling like that today. You know, I think just in our culture, I think a lot of people are feeling like that.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do. And you can probably see certain aspects of both sides of the extreme arguments being rational thought. But you have to kind of come down for yourself on your personal opinion. You have to decide, well, you don't have to decide, but you, most people decide what they think is better.
Yeah.
And I just don't think he knows yet.
Yeah. Issues like this have become very clouded. There's a lot of rhetoric. There's a lot of, trigger, you know, when people say they're triggered, you know, it's just like, certain people hear a phrase or a word, you know, somebody wants to talk about X and it's like, oh my God, you know, there's so much bad blood that comes with that. And, you know, there are just, there were never a clear delineation of sides, of choices for this. And it's just kind of gotten worse over the last 20 or 30 years.
I would agree with that
for the way that people want to discuss this.
Now let me ask you this, because this came up in the show, in this episode, is it because we don't discuss it? That's what Curtis was saying.
Yeah.
We don't have discussions when we disagree. We shy away from conflict when we discuss these topics. And so is that why? I mean,
I think there's a big element of that. You know, there are, like he says, it's become impolitic to discuss politics. It's that is really a good reason that we don't teach ways to discuss this. We don't. I think in schools, at least in the schools here, we don't talk about a number of things that, you know, people need to understand about living in the 21st century. You know, we don't cover history up until, you know, like beyond the 1970s or something like that. You know, it's just there's how do you discuss stuff? How do you, some people know how to talk about things and how to disagree with other people, and other people, they don't know how to disagree without being angry. And as soon as emotion gets into this, then feelings get hurt. You know, people can get hurt. It's really difficult. And, you know, there's a lot of, like I said, there's just a lot of, I don't know, I guess repression, about discussing stuff like this, because, you know,
it's like a defense mechanism. You're not sure where it's going to lead, you know?
And right.
Which also leads me to think about how Rene was presented in this episode, because he was, you know, while I wasn't a huge fan of how they presented his backstory, and I get why they did it like that, I gained some respect for the character because of the way he interacted with Curtis. They disagreed. I mean, extremely disagreed.
They have been disagreeing for weeks.
Yeah. But I mean, on this, I mean, they obviously were on opposite sides of the issue.
Yeah.
However, at the end, you know, Renee's like, "What? You don't think I can handle hard conversations? It's all good." You know, I mean, so the way he reacted to what Curtis was saying, I thought was an appropriate way to debate people, because, you know, you don't have to agree with somebody, but you present both sides of the argument. You see where it leads and you're respectful of each other. And I think to a point, both of them were fairly respectful to each other, even though they were both pretty emotional and had good reason to be emotional about their opinions.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, do you respect other people? You know, I could get into a discussion about entitlement, because I think a lot of people feel that they're entitled to be be treated a certain way. And that's where a lot of the issue comes from too, because if you are quote unquote disrespecting them, and you know, you could just be like you say, you know, just discussing a topic, and it's and oh, they yeah. feel they're being disrespected. It's
well, and I think that's what's gotten you know, and again, I'm trying not to get on my high horse with this discussion, but it is it's a important my high horse is standing on a soapbox at the pulpit. That's wow. actually what I'm doing right now.
That is some high horse, man. I thought it was just because you live in Colorado. Hey,
oh well, that too. There you go. But oh, now I forgot where I was going with that. But
entitlement,
yeah, and oh, the sense of entitlement is that you aren't allowed to tell me I'm wrong or even disagree with me. You know, I mean, when you yeah. disagree with somebody, you're basically saying, "No, look, I think you're wrong. I think I'm right. I think you're wrong." That's what you're saying. You can do it in a respectful way, but I think we've gotten to the point where people feel like if you disagree with them, you're saying they're wrong, and that's not your right. You have no right to say that I'm wrong. I don't know.
I do. It's the First Amendment. It says I can say you're wrong. I'm pretty sure that's what the First Amendment says. Well,
is that what it says?
What they also did with Oliver in this episode, though, was they went back, I felt, very much to the 1970s roots of the character when Neil Adams was drawing him, and Oliver was kind of the crusading liberal, you know, jumping around the United States. He was dealing with drug issues and stuff. I think there was an episode about guns there as well, but there was one shot from this episode that I thought was a great frame, and it's where he's got the guy hanging upside down and Oliver's holding the gun like right at this guy's face. It was a really striking picture because, of course, you know, you're seeing the Green Arrow with a bow and arrow, and here, you know, it's like if you were to see Captain America with a gun, you know, it's just a really striking contrast in the character's archetype, right? That you're used to
seeing.
You
know what also I thought struck me with that scene?
What's that?
Is that this episode was not solved and could not be solved by the Green Arrow. And you very
yes.
rarely saw him in the Green Arrow suit at all in this episode. That was one of the few, maybe the only scene where you saw him as the Green
yes.
Arrow.
Yeah, I believe
and
it
you
was.
Saw him with a gun mm-hmm. instead of a bow and arrow. And it tells you right there, the Green Arrow cannot solve this gun debate.
And you I thought know, that was great because of all the discussion we were having towards the end of last season where Oliver was trying to find himself and, you know, am I the Green Arrow or am I Oliver Queen? And, you know, now to be able to have Oliver Queen has to be the hero in this episode, not the Green Arrow.
Yep.
That was a really interesting point for the character.
There was another point in which Oliver Queen, the Mayor Queen, was the hero in this. And I actually had to watch this several times. I had to slow it down to verify that this was real. But when the gunman came in right at the beginning and the Secret Service or whatever they call them for the mayor, I don't know, his guards, right, they rushed into his office. They grabbed him. They grabbed him around the chest and started pulling him out
yes.
as the gunman was coming in. As they're going out of the office, Adrian gets shot. And then they let go of Oliver as they're running. One of the guards, who looks a lot like Mark Guggenheim, I thought I had to double check to see him, but I think it was still
funny.
A stunt. It was a stunt man, I'm pretty sure, but it did yeah. look a lot like him. He gets shot, and there was a female worker, you know, staff member
uh-huh.
that was also running out with him, and Oliver pulls her down below the table and saves her life from
now,
this gun.
Was that Thea? That wasn't Thea, right? That was just
it was not
worker.
Thea. It was a
okay.
woman in a blue suit.
Okay.
And
yeah.
because he lost track of Thea
That's
at
right.
that point.
That's right.
Because he had to yell. So, but that was another time when Oliver saved her life and not the Green Arrow. So I thought that was kind of cool too. There was a lot of really neat stuff to look at in this episode, as thought provoking and topical as it was. But
yeah. Well, and before I move on to the next thing I want to talk about, I'm going back to that scene with the where Oliver is threatening the guy to find out, you know, if it was actually a member of, you know, some street gang or something that had the gun or used the gun or whatever.
Wasn't he a Bertinelli?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, right. That was one of the Bertinelli mm-hmm. boys. The show brings in Vigilante, who is a gun-toting killer, you know, gun-toting Vigilante, who kills this mobster. And which I thought was an interesting contrast, obviously, you know, because Oliver was only threatening the guy with the gun. I'd never felt that Oliver really was going to use it. At worst, he might have just hit the guy with the butt of the gun, you know, on the face. But Vigilante kills him. But it raised something because, as you mentioned, Adrian got shot earlier. And he's trying to get out of the hospital, and he's like, oh, he does not look good. Like, you don't think that he's going to be able to stand up. Now, we've been pretty confident that Adrian is Vigilante because in the comic books, Adrian Chase is Vigilante. But I'm starting to have second thoughts now because Vigilante handled his gun pretty well. And he, when Oliver tried to fire an arrow back at him, Vigilante dove out of the way. And if that was Adrian Chase with a gun wound, he was moving pretty well.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I even went back and to see if he was sort of favoring his right arm because I think he got shot in the left shoulder.
He got shot in the left shoulder, right. And he was moving his left hand. Like, he was holding the gun with his right arm, but he was gesturing with his left hand up and down. So
I noticed that too.
But the voice is very much the actor that plays Adrian Chase, just kind of modulated. I mean, at least to me, it sounds very, very similar, so... I don't know.
Yeah. I am still leaning towards him being Vigilante. You know, I mean, they can take some sort of liberties with some of that. You know, he could, I mean, look at what Oliver's done.
Yeah.
Oliver was stabbed in the chest with a sword and came back, you know, 2 months later. So
missed every vital organ somehow.
It did. So I'm kind of leaning towards Adrian still being okay. The other piece of evidence to kind of support that was that just moments before he was telling Oliver that he suspected the Bertinelli's because that's the gun that they use, and then all of a sudden, you know, Green Arrow catches a Bertinelli, and now here's Vigilante right here to take him out.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that was the other piece of evidence that I thought supported him still being Vigilante.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to see yet another mystery that we will get to eventually at some point this this season, I guess. All right. Well, like I said earlier, there were a number of statistics and facts that were, I felt, they were pretty conspicuous as they were placed into the episode about gun violence. I was going to say mostly by Renee, but I'm sorry, mostly by Curtis. But
Curtis,
it was it was in the discussions between Renee and Curtis, and then there was also I didn't write down who said some of these, but I think Quentin had one, and Dinah had one of these quotes as well. So I just kind of wanted to I got six different ones here. I'm going to take these and I'm going to put them on our show notes up at randomchatter.com. If you guys want to click through on the links to see where I got, you know, the information for this from, you know, it's what's great is it's pretty easy to do research on the internet, but you can't just always go and take the first hit you find when you ask the question, because you have to look at the source where stuff's coming from. So I was trying to, you know, find information what do I want to call it? I didn't want to have a bias. What do you call that when as neutral as possible, I guess?
Unbiased, yeah.
Unbiased, well, yeah, I guess. Okay. Well, the first quote was that the AR-15 is basically an M16. Now, I've heard, you know, I know the M16 is a gun that's been used in the military since Vietnam, I believe. And I know the AR-15 is an assault weapon that can be bought by individuals. So I went looking on the internet for this. That is true. The military's M16 is just another name for the AR-15, also known as an XM I6EI or E1. And I got this from a report on the M16 rifle review panel from June 1st, 1968. So the AR-15 is just another name for the M16. Then somebody said that the AR-15 is the most popular gun in America. Now, I could not find any actual statistics on this, but According to the NRA blog from January of 2016, it is the most popular gun in America, and they list a number of the reasons why. To count, one of the reasons is that you can actually customize the gun with all sorts of decals and stickers, much like you would do to your Xbox. You know, like rub a, like put a skin on it with different designs and stuff. So if you want a My Little Pony AR-15, you could probably get that.
No thanks, I'm good. I'll stick with my R2-D2 Xbox. How's that?
That is perfectly fine. Then Quentin said, in talking to Renee, isn't it illegal for someone dishonorably discharged to carry a firearm? This is true. If someone is dishonorably discharged from the military, they are not allowed to own firearms, according to U.S. federal law. I was trying to look for an actual Navy regulation on this, but I found this under the types of military discharges from a website called the Military Wallet from January of 2011. There was another quote that said, there is no gun ownership database. I marked this one as misleading, Josh, and you may know a little bit more on this or not. I don't know. But according to the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, they do have a database, but it's not searchable. So as someone who designs databases for a living, the fact that a database is not searchable, it's really not a database then.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. So according to this, dealer records, meaning the people that sell guns, are required to be non-searchable under federal law. I'm not sure about why that is. Keyword searches or sorting by date or any other field are strictly prohibited.
So my two questions on this, what is it then? I mean,
it is a collection of individual pieces of information about guns and the people that sell them with, like, pictures of the guns and I think serial numbers. But you have to – it's like a book. You would have to scroll through it, like, page by page.
Huh. So it's not even in any kind of order or anything, huh?
Yeah. You can read this is from an article called The ATF's Nonsensical Nonsearchable Gun Database Explained from thetrace.org from August of 2016.
Hmm. Now, what about like a Control F? Would that work?
Probably not. If it's probably in like Windows 3.1, which I don't think even has a search function like that. So,
okay.
Curtis mentions that black men are three times more likely to be killed by a gun than you. He was indicating Renee. So I was just taking. I wasn't looking at specifically like black man versus Latino. I was just looking at black men and how likely are they to be killed by a gun. This is mostly true. It's also kind of misleading. There are two ways to look at this. From the information that I got from Brookings Education, Brookings EDU, which basically was graphs published between 2011, it's data from 2011 to 2013, published by the CDC Injury and Prevention Database. It's the U.S. gun death by race and gender. So it's 3 years worth of data from about 4 to 6 years ago. So if you look overall at all black men versus non-black men, it's about 340,000 black men to approximately 170,000 white men, which is about a 2-to-1 ratio. So it's not really three times more likely. It's more like two times more likely. But when you then drill down into it and you look at the ages 20 to 29, the number of black men killed by guns jumps to 900,000 versus 200,000, which is about 4.5 times as likely to be killed.
Can I ask a question if you have this information?
Sure.
I'm sorry, that's 900,000 black men have been shot in this 3 year period of time?
Yes. There were 900,000 shootings involving black men. That they have.
Wow, that is
in this ages 20 to 29.
Shockingly large number.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Sorry.
There's a lot of violence going on in the world, and I see a bunch here in Baltimore, but then I see, you know, when I hear the statistics in Baltimore, and you know, we're edging into December, and they're talking about how, you know, over 360 people have been killed in the city this year. And you're like, that's more than one per day. You know, that's pretty crazy. But then you hear about stuff that's going on in Chicago. You know, it's where it's like twice that, I think. So, yeah, there's a lot of angry people out there, Josh. And they have...
Yes, there are.
And they have ways to take lives.
All right, well, let me just say, if you're angry at me, it's okay. Let's talk about it, and we'll work this out in a different way.
Josh is not saying you're wrong. He just doesn't understand what you
mean. I'm saying you're wrong. I'm saying you're wrong. And I'm okay with saying you're wrong, and let's talk about it. That's what I'm saying.
All right. The final piece I wanted to touch on, Renee says that the feds had an assault weapon ban, and it did nothing. Then Curtis starts to disagree with that, but then they're called away to do something else. This is debatable, and this is one of those things where it comes down to what studies do you want to look at. So what we can't argue about, there was an assault weapons ban from 1994 to 2004. It was enacted by President Clinton, and it was given a 10-year life cycle on it. It was meant always to go away after 10 years. The Task Force on Community Prevention Services, an independent, non-federal task force, examined an assortment of firearm laws, including the AWB, the Assault Weapons Ban, and found, quote, insufficient evidence to determine the effectiveness of any of the firearm laws regarding the preventing of violence. While other studies, though, they say there was some benefit, we're talking about 1 or 2% differences, like there were 3% of the gun crimes committed were with assault weapons in the 5 years prior to the ban, and then once the ban started, we dropped to like 1.5%. So the study's authors said that guns were used criminally with relative rarity before the ban, and that its maximum potential effect on gun violence outcomes would be very small to begin with. Actually, the most used gun in any kind of crime is not an assault weapon. It is a handgun. We're talking about, you know, robberies and things like that. It's the big name, quote unquote, incidents that we hear about, the Sandy Hook, the Columbine, the Dark Knight Theater shooting, Pulse nightclub, things like that, where they are using rifles or semi-automatic weapons, you know, larger caliber and things, you know, not necessarily handguns. Now, I took this information from Wikipedia, but it was from the effectiveness of the assault weapon ban legislation page. There's a lot of other information that the wiki site sources from, and I just didn't list all of those sites, but it comes from a number of studies on the assault weapons ban that took place across those 10 years and since 2004.
Well, that's all very interesting data and statistics, and you know, something to at least think about. And I think that's what Oliver was trying to do. I think he was trying to make the best decision for everybody. No, that's not the way I want to put it. He was trying to make a decision that would benefit everybody in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He definitely wanted to save lives. He felt that the taking of these innocent lives was a shame. But he did not. And it wasn't that it was, you know, about his constituency or anything like that. It was that, you know, he wanted the people that wanted to own weapons to be able to own weapons. He didn't want to take something from somebody. He just wanted to prevent senseless murder.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I, you know, people could argue with me on this if they disagree, but I feel like Oliver's motivations for this were not politically motivated.
Yeah.
You know, they were personally motivated, based on, you know, helping people and saving lives. And that's, you know, you just don't see that in politicians from what I observe of politicians.
It was in direct contrast to the councilwoman. I wanted to punch her in the face. She's like, oh, are you blaming me for this? It's like, hey, let's calm down here a minute. He's not blaming you for the fact that these people died.
And then she acted in a very political way.
She's like, I'm going to extract a political fee from you at some point in the future for this, but this is fine. We can do this. I'm like, you know, at that point, it's like, screw you. You know, it's he's gonna do what he's going to do because he's mayor. And then when she tries to exact something from him, he should let everybody know what kind of person she is. I don't know. It's that.
Well, we have I think he has a long road ahead of him, because I think they're all going to find out he's Green Arrow here pretty soon. So,
yeah. Yeah. And then there'll be other things for people to worry about. So,
yeah.
Anyway, hopefully we were able to provide a little bit of food for thought. I think the episode did as well. I feel like I'm a little more knowledgeable about things, having to have done, you know, this research, so that I can at least talk intelligently about things. I'm never one in any kind of debates, you know, to be able to just pull statistics out of my head. You know, I don't memorize statistics so that I can go debate people about, you know, different topics and stuff like that.
Sure.
It's more, you know, feeling and stuff like that, I think, than cold hard numbers. And of course, you know, you can kind of look at different statistics and, you know, make them, you know, bend them to your argument and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Unfortunately, that happens a lot. So, well, overall, I thought this episode was, I thought it was well done. And I think it's important for your pop culture entertainment to periodically address real world issues in a way that helps people keep it in their head. And like you said, you thought a lot about it and you feel more knowledgeable from thinking about this episode and having to do some of that research. And I think that's an important thing to do in our culture. So it does stay, you know, in the forefront a little bit, so we can continue to address anything that is a problem for our communities and for our culture and for our country. So I thought it was really well done, and I like where they put Oliver in this position, not just because it kind of leaned him more toward the liberal character that he has been in the comics, but also I thought it was a realistic position to put Oliver in based on everything that he's gone through in his life,
right,
and where he probably would stand on something like this. So I also thought Stephen Amell did a really good job.
Yeah, I mean, you could see the kind of the anguish in his face as he was trying to say the right thing at the right time and respect everybody. And, you know, it was tough for him. I enjoyed the episode. I'd like to see them do this more. Guggenheim said in one interview, you know, he's like, if we can do 22, you know, cheesy candy kind of episodes, you know, and we can do one episode that's kind of like eating your vegetables, I think we've kind of earned that. And they definitely have. I think they've earned doing a few more. I wouldn't mind them doing a couple of these, per season. Given how light and fluffy the episodes are in general, you know, if you listen to any of the other podcasts that we do, especially our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, there are a lot more metaphors and allusions to real world issues on that show than Arrow even approaches with this particular one. Like, just doing this one episode, that doesn't make up for kind of all the situations and things that like S.H.I.E.L.D. talks about, but you know, it's a start, and you're right. I think it's good for the masses that look at this, even to get exposed to this tangentially. You know, even if they're not going to really either pay attention or do any extra research on their own, that, you know, oh yeah, I remember there was wasn't there an Arrow that they did something about this? I remember them talking about this on Arrow or something like that. You know, that's useful. Yeah. Just as a quick reference, there really wasn't a lot else in this episode, but the title of this episode was the same as a season 3 episode of the original Star Trek, Spectre of the Gun, which when I heard about it, I'm like, oh, cool, they're going to do an homage to Star Trek on Arrow, and I wasn't sure how that was actually going to happen, so luckily it turned out better.
I'm not sure how. I wouldn't mind seeing something like that, but maybe not on this one.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you for joining us and listening to us talk about this rather, what I think might be a difficult episode to watch for some people, for any different reason. But that's all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice. So thanks for joining us.
And you know what? Even though it was a little bit different, maybe a little bit even more serious conversation that you and I had this week, we hope you guys still enjoyed it. And you know what? Don't worry. There'll be plenty of time this season for more lighthearted and fun talk.
I dropped so few puns this episode.
Me too. No singing. We need another singing episode. and if you don't enjoy those, that's okay. You don't have to let us know those. So other than me singing, we'd love to have you leave feedback for us on iTunes. You can also contact us directly. If you want to send us an email, send it to greenjustice@randomchatter.com, or you can find us on Twitter @greenjusticepod. And our Facebook page is facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
You can also check out the other podcasts Josh and I host, including the aforementioned Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and also Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, which is actually off this week due to the Valentine's holiday, but we'll return next week with an episode with Gorilla Grodd. You can find these all at randomchatter.com, and all shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. As I said, I'll also be posting the fact check sheet that I for these six topics on our story at randomchatter.com. So if you just go there and look up this episode of Arrow, you'll see it. And of course, if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.